a production of South Dakota Public Broadcasting.
Dollars for these two courses. Doing this kind of work is very, very expensive. To pay for course fees, for travel. We had 40 buyers and feed manufacturers come, and we taught them the risk management and the efficient feed manufacturing technique. So it's not cheap. So to do this kind of work, so we have to rely on our commodity friends to help. What we try to do is we ask the people that come, these participants, that they pay a fee and that they pay their travel. We feel that they've got to have some skin in the game, so they pay a fee to attend the course, and they will also then be asked to pay for their own plane ticket. And again, these course participants then are selected by the national commodity groups that are on site in those countries. But again, it's expensive to do this kind of work. We teach a feed manufacturing course to some of the graduate students at South Dakota State and the U of M. We taught this course in 2013. A picture here that those grad students came up to Fargo. An aquaponics seminar was held at the Lake Area Tech Institute in Watertown. We sent our feed mill director down there to give them some information about aquaculture and the types of fish feed. There was about 150 students and faculty that attended this. I talked about technical support that we provide. Here's a picture of a China food show. We sent two of our staffers to China. This was a very, very large food ingredient workshop held in Beijing. They were sponsored by the USDA and the Foreign Ag Service. There were people from the industry there, and we put on some seminars on using some of our crops in their products. We put on a pea flour processing training program in China. We sent Nagy, one of our very capable staff persons, over there to teach that. We were in Myanmar. Our feed mill director is pictured on the right there. He's got the black shirt on way on the right. He was in Myanmar assisting, providing seminars to livestock, poultry, and the aquaculture feed industry. Again, showing the benefits of our soy meal coming out of this region, the qualities of our corn, how to be more efficient feeders. These, again, were companies that are buying product from the U.S. We were in Uruguay. We were in Uruguay assisting them with a feed production facility. That company there is the largest dairy co-op in Uruguay. They produce 80% of the country's milk. The soybean or U.S. Grains Council works with them very closely. They buy certain feed ingredients from the U.S. Malaysia, Philippines, and Thailand. We presented some seminars to them on behalf of the U.S. Dry Bean Council on some of the mechanics of dry bean and meat canning. We met with 20 companies there. We provided technical information on the dry beans that we raise in this region and their application. There's Nagy. Nagy is a native of Thailand, one of our rising stars in our organization. She's a food and cereal scientist. She speaks a couple of languages. She traveled with U.S. Wheat Associates and some of the wheat commissioners down to Central America, and she gave the crop quality report of the hard red spring wheat that we raise in this region. There were a number of flour millers there from about a half a dozen countries in South America. These flour millers, they like our wheat because of our quality. We also hosted trade teams. We had 18 trade teams come from 9 countries there in 2013. On these visits, we will focus on giving them an update on the crop, what they can expect from the crop in terms of its quality, because they're out shopping already looking for their next purchases. We went to Turkey not too long ago on behalf of the National Sunflower Association. They asked us to work with their baking industry to teach them how to utilize sunflower seeds in the baking of products. One of the things in our work, we continue to evaluate the opportunities, look for ways to even get to a larger audience. One of the things we did this fall, myself and our feed mill director traveled to Southeast Asia. We spent 2 weeks there. We visited a number of the mills. We visited with some of the grain buyers, some of the flour millers, again, to find out what additional information they need. Many of these are already current customers of ours. The American Soybean Association lined up these visits, and we saw firsthand, some of the work that they're doing. We met with a number of people that had already been to the NCI, so we wanted to do it as a bit as a follow-up. One of the things we're doing in response is we are going to be going to Singapore to present a seminar in Singapore here later this spring on risk management. Ideally, we always like to bring the customers here, but for many of them it's expensive. Many of them can't afford the time to travel to come over here. So this time we're going to try something different. We're going to travel to Singapore and put on the presentations there in risk management. We expect that it'll be a very large a turnout. They won't have to travel as far. And we think that we need to do some of this, although that's not our main mission. We still want to bring them to the United States so we can build and develop that relationship. When they come here, there's nothing like taking them out to the farm where they can kick the tires, climb up on top of the combine. That's part of the relationship that we want to build. So we talk about Southeast Asia, the increased efforts we're making. This is a picture of our feed production center. It's located on the north side of the NDSU campus. This was built in 1980. Besides teaching the various courses for our overseas folks, we also make all of the feed for the Ag Experiment Station. It was built in 1990, and at the time it was a state-of-the-art, but there's been no major renovations made since then, so we are embarking on a major new equipment upgrade of these facilities. We're putting in a new computer operating system, a new mixer, a new micronutrient system. It's about a $950,000 project. When the people come from these countries around the world, especially those in upper management or the owners of their factories, you know, they want to see world class, and we believe it's important that we maintain that reputation as a world class facility. Of the 950,000, we've had tremendous support from the private sector. We've got 500,000 of that has been donated in terms of equipment from our friends in the private sector. So they believe in the effort. Some of the, like I said, 500,000 has come from the private sector. We gathered another 200,000 from the soybean and corn checkoff groups, and then our own legislature in North Dakota gave us $100,000 to support this effort. So again, we're part of an overall team made up of our legislative friends, the commodity groups, the land grant universities, and the private sector. So what are some of the success stories? And of course, this is the most important question to ask. What good does all this do? How do we measure results? And of course, that's always a little challenging to quantify the number of bushels they bought or the number of bushels of soybeans they bought. That's tough to quantify. I know all the commodity groups struggle with that a bit. But we do have some specific examples. The first one I'll talk about here is the success in pulses. And when I say pulses, I mean peas and lentils particularly. The last number of years, Nagy, one of our food scientists, has been one of the lead, gave some of the lead presentations at the Culinary Institute of America, some of their food shows that they hold in New York City. And at that institute are a number of the chefs from high-end restaurants in that industry. She's given a number of lectures on how to incorporate peas and lentils into some of the food menu items. That's been catching on, and now in the last year, United Pulse is going to be building an expanded plant in Minot, North Dakota, and it's going to possibly employ possibly up to 75 people. They're very excited about it. They've already they've got They've already got it built. They've already made some big shipments, and certainly the NCI certainly can't take credit for that, but we did play a part in that in a small way. In terms of wheat, last year, one of the managers that was the first hired to set up and build a brand new flour mill in Indonesia. And he was the new manager hired, came and attended our wheat contracting for value workshop, and returned home, and his very first purchase was $9 million of hard red spring wheat from this region. And U.S. Wheat Associates worked with him on that purchase. Soybeans, the Sojus Trading Company is a very large trading company owned by the Japanese, but are very large in Japan. They traditionally have bought soy meal in very small quantities in containers. And, of course, buying it in containers is a lot more expensive, certainly. But anyway, Sojus came to our grain marketing seminar last year, and recently now, and we paid a follow-up visit to them. We visited with them here this fall when we were there. They've begun buying bulk U.S. soy meal, and they've landed three or four boatloads so far of bulk soy meal into Vietnam. Their goal is to import one vessel per month of soy meal from AGP's facility located out there on the PNW, and of course that's supplied from this region. The fourth one I'd like to mention is Sun Butter. Maybe some of you have heard of Sun Butter. As you know, many people are allergic to peanut butter. Red River Commodities is a sunflower processor located in West Fargo. Some of you may know who they are. They have a collection point down in Miller, South Dakota, where the farmers can deliver their sunflower seeds there. But anyway, the headquarters and processing plant is in West Fargo. They recognized a possible opportunity with people that are allergic to peanut butter, so they came to our staff a number of years ago, and our staff did the analysis, did the tests, developed some formulations to incorporate sunflower seeds to make a spread, a sunflower spread, if you will. We gave that back to Red River Commodities, and they launched the product Sun Butter, and you can still buy it today in the grocery store. So again, we'd like to think we had a small part in that. So that pretty much gives you kind of an overview of some of the activities that we do. One of the things, we'd like to take this opportunity to invite you members of this committee to come up and visit us sometime. Here's a picture we had of some of the legislators that came this fall. We had legislators from three states. Senator Jason Freericks attended. You recognize him. I think he's about the fifth one there from the right. He attended along with some legislators from Minnesota and South Dakota. We also have some of the South Dakota wheat commissioners in that picture. We've got Daryl Davis, Randy Eglund, Leo Warrington. Let's see, did I get them all? Well, anyway, they accompanied Jason up to the event, and we'd really like to invite you all to come up there sometime, if you will. And I know the South Dakota Wheat Growers and South Dakota Wheat Commission, I think, be very happy to help facilitate that for you. So we encourage you to come up and pay us a visit. Here's our website. We've got a lot of interesting things on the website if you're at all further interested. And finally, we want to say a big thank you to the state of South Dakota. Your very gracious support for the ongoing appropriations to fund the NCI. So we thank you for that. I'm going to quit there, and I'm happy to answer any questions if you have any. So thank you, Madam Chairwoman.
Thank you, Director Weber. We appreciate you joining us. You may have had three national championships out of North Dakota with NDSU Bison, but we have a little bit of an accolade here. We finally beat North Dakota for the second time in a row for sunflower production. So if the war continues, we may not have the football team, but we may capture our third-year title next year with our sunflower production. So we would love to challenge you on that again, with our weather being cooperative, and your weather wasn't as cooperative in your area for sunflower production. So at this time, committee, I do want to open up to questions if you have any for Director Weber. We have several here. Let's start with Senator Lucas and then Senator Rampelberg. Senator Lucas.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Mark, for your presentation. A little bit of Durham bread and warm Durham bread and sun butter probably hit the spot about now on this windy day. My question is, we just started that Pulse production plant there in Herald, and maybe we'll get a chance to look at that on our East River Ag Tour this summer, but you have listed in here one of your sponsors, the United Pulse Trading. So is that a place that people can go and trade internationally if they want to market their own product, or is that something controlled just by brokers?
Mr. Weber?
Yeah, I don't know all the particulars about how that works, and plans are for delivery. But I know in speaking with United Pulse, one of their managers there in Minot, they've been very aggressive, and they are, I think they're shipping more quantity than what they had originally envisioned. Beyond that, how that works in terms of delivery and brokers, I don't know how that works.
Follow up, Senator Lucas. Senator Rampelberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Actually, I had a couple questions. One is, explain to me a little bit maybe about the collaboration between your institution and some of the university research centers.
Yep. As I said earlier, we are not the research, we don't do basic hardcore research, so to speak, but the research that comes out of the land grant universities, we will apply and communicate that information. In terms of South Dakota State, our feed mill director works very closely with one of your swine scientists at South Dakota State, and the name escapes me right now. But your scientist at South Dakota State provides a lot of information to our feed mill director. We also have him come up to Fargo to give lectures. He will be part of this lecture when we bring this Chinese feed manufacturing team. What he's going to be talking about, he will be coming up to Fargo from South Dakota State, and he's going to be talking about the quality of the soy meal, the soybeans growing out of this region. The U of M has been doing some research through the years. Our soybeans have been unfairly criticized for low protein levels. I think those of you as farmers know that we've always been kind of knocked in the head with lower protein levels for soybeans. The U of M has done some research now that shows that protein may not necessarily be the total reliable measure of rate of gain on an animal. That rather it's the quality of the protein, and the U of M has done some of this research. And we're going to be taking this and explaining this to our customers. When our Chinese friends come, we'll be having the swine scientist from South Dakota State coming up, and he will be explaining that you don't look at raw protein, but rather the quality of the protein. Without getting into a bunch of science, they call it essential amino acids. I'm not sure I even know what an essential amino acid is, but the livestock scientists know that, and that's what they will be explaining. So that's one of the relationships we have with South Dakota State and the U of M. So again, we don't do the research, the hardcore. We rely on them to do it, and then they help us communicate that.
Follow up, Senator Rampelberg.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. And this is a speculation question, but it's one that I've had discussions with some people. But from your viewpoint, has your organization spent any time looking down the road 10, 15, 20 years as we move to that from the 6 to the 7 billion to the yep. 9 billion? I have some concerns about how we're going to feed the planet, if you will. Has your organization looked at that at all?
The thing that we look at is that as incomes get better, there's going to be a huge demand for protein. They want protein, and that's going to come in the form of meat, milk, and eggs. And we see, you know, the feed side, providing the feed for the livestock. Aquaculture is a big deal. And we see that there's a huge future there. But we also see, as those middle incomes rise, they're going to demand more convenience, more specialty items, the healthy, you know, they talk more about fiber, beta glucans, for example, barley. Barley has got a label designated by the Food and Drug Administration called heart healthy, because barley contains something called beta glucan, which is good for lowering cholesterol. And so the barley industry is doing more work in using food grade barley in some of these products. So we see that as the future. The market will get more specialized. They'll want more products more specifically tailored to meet their needs. You might not even see it in the current grade grading system that we have. They might want a load of wheat with a very specific falling number, if you will, or a very specific farinograph number that's not currently in the grading system. So, again, we see the challenge as they want more milk, meat, and eggs. So we see a huge for the feeding sector. We see a future with more of a specialization. And then with the health thing, as their incomes rise, they will then afford to be able to eat healthier. So we see those as some challenges.
For the question, Senator Amdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Thank you for your testimony here, Mark. I have a question to ask you. We're on a global market here. How does Russia's production of wheat compare to the United States? I know China has a vast appetite for it, but I'm just wondering, how does Russia play into this since on a global market basis?
One of the things, their wheats, particularly in the Black Sea, they are a lot lower in protein levels. Their wheats are 2, 3, 4 points lower in protein. So they don't have the high quality wheats that we have. But I might ask Randy here, our exec of the South Dakota Wheat Commission, maybe to comment on that a little bit more.
Randy, come up to the microphone and then make sure that the internet listeners can hear, and then just state your name and who you represent and share your testimony. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chairwoman. I'm Randy England, the Executive Director of the South Dakota Wheat Commission. Perception is that the United States is a major wheat producer. I mean, we've been called number one, but we're not. China outproduces us almost 3 times as much as what we produce here in the United States. But their consumption level is far beyond what they can do on their own. The Black Sea market, which is a combination of the Stans, former Soviet Union, is also larger production area than what we are. Our advantages are, first of all, quality, but there is a price premium to pay for that. But you're going to end up with a better product. And that's the value that we try to express at Northern Crops Institute. The other aspect of it is logistics. We can accumulate and get it to your port probably better than any other country that's existing currently. We're at a disadvantage with the Black Sea because of the logistics, where Egypt, India is becoming more of a buyer. Some of those Mediterranean, Middle East, do buy Russian wheat, but it doesn't perform quite the way as what our quality will do. We've got stronger gluten strength. Mark Weber alluded to one of the companies that was looking at sunflowers being adapted. Well, any of your multi-grain breads need a very high, strong gluten content. Otherwise, all those seeds would go to the bottom of the pan. So you need that strength, that absorption rate, that would keep all of those ingredients spread out through the loaf as it rises, because it'll keep the cell structure together better, more stability, so you get it throughout the piece of bread. So again, as those countries move away from flatbreads, some of their traditional, and go to the high-rising, high-value baked products, they're going to be looking for that type of quality, and that's our advantage in those terms. We try to express quality, and everybody wants to buy based on price. But most of the millers that you talk to and the bakers will tell you that sometimes the cheapest wheat makes the most expensive flour. So they need to have that quality to blend up to get it to the type of product that's going to be presentable and going to in market. So, but the Black Sea is they're a big competitor, and they're going to continue to be a competitor. And but we're also going to see the adaptation similar to what we're doing as they move to maybe higher level crops. We'll see the adaptation of corn in those areas that are predominantly wheat countries. So there is competition. Our advantage right now is indeed our quality, and the NCI facility is that facility that we can express that, convey that message, and help with marketing our crops here.
Thank you, Mr. Englund.
Thank you.
Senator Valley.
I was very glad to hear that barley has some cholesterol-reducing capabilities so that my barley pop, I'm assuming, has the same thing. You don't need to answer that. I'm just going to assume that. For a while, there was a talk of a soft red winter wheat up here that people were working on and seeing if that was going to be a crop in this neck of the woods. And I haven't heard much of that lately. Did that is that still out there?
Should have stayed up here. Again, predominantly, we're a hard red winter state.
Yes.
Hard red spring, hard red winter wheats.
Yeah.
Unique in that aspect because we produce about equal amounts. Soft red winter is more adaptable to the eastern part of the United States as well as the southern, usually a double cropping system there. They get tremendous yields. But as we've brought some of those varieties in here, that class of wheat, and tried to incorporate it into some of our rotations, we don't have the rainfall. We've even tried it under irrigation, and we're not getting the yields that our neighbors that have a little better precipitation rates do. So it's not adapted that well. We do have a couple of companies that are contracting with some farmers. Down around Clint's area, we've got a producer that is supplying some soft red winter wheat to a pretty high-level company. Well, it's Kellogg. I'm not supposed to. But we have been working with Kellogg to see if we can develop some of those varieties and maybe work those into the rotations and make it profitable for having wheat in the rotation again. The other one is hard white wheat, and that was one that we developed at SDSU. That we did really well with. It's a tremendous class of wheat. But the buyers kind of played some games with us, and our producers just said, we're not going to do it anymore. But that's coming back as well with this movement to whole grains. The white wheat really does a good job with the whole grain because you can do a whole grain, and it doesn't look like the old brown breads that some of the people don't care for. But you can still have all the nutrient value with everything that you're blending back in with a whole wheat product. Sara Lee's bread is a hard white wheat bread. I'm trying to think what the name of the, but it's a whole wheat, but it looks just like your regular white flour wheat. But it is actually ground so finely that it has all the bran, all the germ, and everything, all the components of it, that it does meet a whole wheat product. But it still is at high gluten. You know, you can roll it up in a ball like the old Wonder Bread that everybody grew up with. Well, maybe you didn't. You're too young. But that's going to be a big movement, and also worldwide. And we've NCI has done a lot of whole grain product programs up there. We're seeing those countries moving to that higher nutrition, better value on it, and so whole grains is really going to be a movement throughout the world.
Follow-up, Senator Valley?
I was just going to say you're going to have to kind of stick with one variety because you blow seed out the back end, and if you don't kill that, or if you're going wheat back to back, you're going to mix, you know, you don't want to be mixing hard white with hard red, and because when you bring it to the elevator, I was in that business for half my business life, and people like to blend their sometimes their winter wheat and their spring wheat,
uh-huh.
And that didn't go over real well. And I used to tell the buyers, I says, well, you blend it when you get there. He says, yeah, we'll blend it.
We want to do that. Yes.
So, secondly, Montana, are they a participant much? I see where they're in the, they're on the picture here, and I see, but I don't see them being a funding partner in a lot of this. Could you kind of?
To date, their legislature has not provided any public funding. Where the funding comes from Montana is from the Wheat and Barley Commission. The Wheat and Barley Commission combined, they contribute anywhere between $50,000 to $100,000 per year, but it's checkoff monies. It's not public state monies.
Further questions of the committee? Director Weber, thank you. Very informative. We appreciate and value your time and coming down, and so thank you for sharing that with us.
Thank you.
Good. I do want to take just a moment of personal privilege and say welcome to our former state representative, Kim Vanneman. Of course, her and her husband, Clint, they have a large wheat operation down there by Ideal, and of course, being a part of the Wheat Commission, you're on the Wheat Commission, and Kim's on a lot of ag commodity groups and a big supporter, and she was a former chairwoman in the House side of the Ag Committee. A great friend and colleague of mine, and I tell you what, you don't want to get on the rough side of Kim. We experienced that in 2011 with the Northern Crops Institute funding right out in that hallway. So ask Dean Wink about that sometime. Just a side note. So welcome to Kim and Clint. Please stand and be recognized for being in our committee this morning. I think that's it. Again, we appreciate your information, Mark. You know, we do have some new processing plants being built. We have, of course, the Paul's processing plant in Harold. I would love to see that. And, of course, we have the new Glambia plant, the flaxseed plant down in Sioux Falls. And so there's a lot of opportunity. I don't think that folks realize the value of our export business in the commodity grains in South Dakota and the region. So I think this is a good start to talk and share the story. So, Mark, thank you. And it shows the value. Randy, any comments?
Would you allow me just a little...
Please. If anything on the flaxseed side or your...
No, this is okay. Going to be on the pasta side,
okay.
The durum side.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to be remiss in remembering what the name is, but recently, within the last 6 months, there was an article about a pasta company in Hartford. I don't know if anybody is familiar with that. But the proprietors of that were starting out in their garage. They were doing their own pasta work. They called our office one day and said, what's wrong? This isn't working. We're not getting the quality that we need out of this pasta to make our product that we're selling in the Sioux Falls area. We then got together with the South Dakota Value Added Center, Ag Center, who they were working with on their business plans. And with the Wheat Commission, the Value Added Center, we contacted NCI, who was having a pasta course, to identify quality and what you need to buy and whatever else. And so I contacted Mark, and they allowed us to reduce their participant fees. We requested that they had to pay a third of it, and then the Wheat Commission with the Value Added Center picked up the rest of that plus some of their travel expenses. And they have recently expanded, and we've gotten contact with them. They know how to buy durum now to make their product, as well as incorporating some of those other flours into it to get the pea and lentil. But to bring it down to a narrow focus here in South Dakota, that a company had the opportunity to go up and learn how to develop their product so that they could sell it locally, a true added value product. Thank you.
Thank you, Randy. I believe that product is sold downtown at Home Porch. I think I've purchased it, and it's really a neat handmade pasta. So with this being said, I'll entertain a motion to adjourn.
Second.
Motion to adjourn by Lucas, seconded by Rampelberg. All those in favor of adjournment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Senate Ag is now adjourned.